Is Jet versus Ford Motor. Ms. Francis.
May it please the court, my name is Elizabeth Francis and I'm with the law firm of Turner & Associates out of North Little Rock, Arkansas. We represent the appellant Valerie Jett in this action. In October of 1997, Ms. Jett purchased a brand new 1998 Ford Explorer. It came equipped with Firestone Wilderness AT tires. Less than 6 months later, Ms. Jett was driving her Explorer on a highway in Arkansas when she experienced...
Well, you know, you say no more than 6 months later, but 6 months can be a long time in the life of a tire. A lot of things can happen if it's defective. So, I mean, don't you have a problem? Your opponent has an expert testifying about what could have happened. And you try to counter that with just lay testimony.
No, sir, I don't believe that's correct.
You say no potholes. She didn't hit any potholes.
Yes, Ms. Jett submitted her evidence.
But the expert for Ford says, well, potholes aren't the only thing that can cause a tire to...
That's correct, but Ms. Jett also submitted the affidavit of her expert, Ken Pearl, who, after reviewing the photographs of the tire and the evidence, the testimony of Ms. Jett, plus two other witnesses that looked at the tire, and he came to the conclusion that it was the cause of the tire tread separation was, in fact, a design defect. And I'm not a tire expert, but 6 months is not usually the length of time in which you would expect a tire to fail.
And you relying on Mr. Pearl's report, but there was an objection by opposing counsel about the failure to comply with Rule 26A concerning his report. What's your comment on that?
Well, I actually am not that prepared to discuss it because the trial court did not rule on it, and I believe the trial court looked at the affidavits and came to the conclusion that there just simply was not enough evidence for a jury to come to the conclusion that the design defect, in fact, caused the problem. But that's the problem we have here. On page 6 of the trial court's opinion, you will see that the trial judge took a look at her affidavit, went through it sentence by sentence, and then came to the conclusion that she simply was not in the position to assert those facts. In other words, she did not believe the affidavit. That is not a proper exercise of judgment when analyzing a motion for summary judgment.
That was the plaintiff's affidavit, though, right? Or was
that's correct.
What about the Pearl report?
I believe what the court concluded about that was because Ken Pearl's affidavit was based on Ms. Jett's affidavit in part, that it was ineffective as well. And our problem, really, it's threefold. We believe that the trial judge erred when she judged the credibility of Ms. Jett. That's a job that's reserved for the jury. And we also believe that she entered into speculation and even went so far as saying, well, Ms. Jett did not say that no one else could have driven her car, and so that must have been what have happened, or at least that's a possible cause.
Do you think you could go forward with nothing but the existing general body of opinion by experts that exists in the multi-district litigation?
Well, I think in this case we have a little more than that.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Do you think you could go forward without that? I know you're saying you've got your client's affidavit and your own expert, but...
And we also have a deposition testimony of two witnesses that accompanied Ms. Jett to the salvage yard. And in their deposition, they testified that they noticed that that it was a tread separation.
Well, the reason I ask that is because we said in prior cases that there could not be class action certified in this case. So are we just backdooring what we said we couldn't do in that with the other one?
I'm sorry, you said
in other words, there could not be a certified class. So now we have this individual litigation, such as you have.
Yes.
But you're seeking to use evidence developed in that litigation, I assume.
Yes, as far as Mr. Pearl's core report, also Firestone's own documents, and as well as NHTSA reports. But what I would like you to focus on is the fact that we believe the trial judge exceeded.
The Firestone or Ford relies primarily. This brief describes Firestone, but is Queiser or Kaiser, however you pronounce that, is that the opposing expert here?
I'm not sure. Kaiser? I believe that's who submitted the affidavit.
So he said flatly, the photographs and videotape recording alone do not permit an expert to rule out other causes of failure, including improper use, repair, maintenance, servicing. Now, did Pearl meet that directly? Did he say, no, that's wrong? The photographs are sufficient?
Well, he came to the conclusion, based on his review of the photographs and other evidence, that it was, in fact, a design defect that had caused this tread separation and caused the accident.
Did he explain how from a photograph you could tell? I mean, obviously the tire failed, but could you tell what the cause of the failure was?
Well, I believe he took that in addition to the other evidence that's in this case.
But he says, and I quote, there is no question that all causes of trade separation other than design and or manufacturing defects that clearly do exist in these tires have been excluded from consideration. How do you
And that was
that statement?
Was that Kaiser's affidavit?
No, that was Pearl's supplemental affidavit. I take it that was his response to Kaiser's comment.
Yeah.
I just want to know what your read on this. This isn't that helpful, seems to me.
That his affidavit isn't that helpful?
Right.
Well, I submit that his affidavit came to the conclusion based on the photographs and the evidence. And I find it ironic that the trial court can point out that it is improper for a jury to enter into speculation and therefore there's not enough evidence, when that's exactly what the trial court did. She did not abide by a standard for summary judgment here, and that's the main issue we have. She drew every inference in favor of Firestone, the moving party, none in favor of Ms. Jett. And I believe that's reversible error. That's all.
The court would be applying Arkansas law, is that correct?
Yes, sir.
And Arkansas law does not require the product to be physically present and available.
No, sir. It does, though, require, you can prove a product defect with direct testimony or direct evidence and circumstantial evidence as well, plus the expert testimony. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Ms. Francis. Mr. Phillips?
My name is Harris Phillips, and I represent Bridgestone Firestone North American Tire, LLC, the appellee in this case. Ford is not a party to the case.
Oh, Ford isn't?
Yeah, that is correct. Ford settled early in the case under terms that I'm obviously not aware of, and they're out of the case. Arkansas law does apply here, and Arkansas law, while it does allow a product case to be proved by circumstantial evidence, the court has been very clear, as most states are, that you have to present more than a choice among possibilities. The jury can't be left to speculation and conjecture, and I submit that that's exactly what we have here. I mean, obviously it's undisputed that the tire was not preserved, but from that, there's lots of things that flow from the failure to preserve the tire. They're a problem for the plaintiff to overcome. The plaintiff cannot provide even such fundamental information as when and where the tire was manufactured. These Wilderness 18 line of tires in this size were manufactured at four different plants by Firestone, and I think the speculation that the plaintiff would have a jury engage in is really comes to the surface here. In the appellant's brief, she talks about Firestone's Decatur plant. Now, from a practical aspect, I understand why she wants to do that. There are some unique manufacturing processes at that plant which have arguably caused problems in some line of tires. And there's even some Firestone report out in the world that's not before your court that suggests some potentially negative things about those unique manufacturing processes. But the point is, she wants to talk about those in her case, but we don't know that that's where the tire was made. Speculation and conjecture to even talk about any particular plant. Now, there has been a... The plaintiff is apparently aware of some of the insufficiencies in her case, and so at every turn has attempted to, in Firestone's view, improperly supplement the record that's involved in this case. In the trial court, she submitted supplemental affidavits in violation of local rule. Before this court, she has submitted in her appendix reports such as the Ken Pearl Core report, the NHTSA report, the public citizen report that was not filed with the trial court, was not relied upon before the trial court. Further, there's the issue of Mr. Pearl's case-specific affidavits that, as you noted, Judge Williams, Firestone contends were submitted in violation of Rule 26A, and Firestone filed a motion to strike on that basis.
Let me take you back just a minute.
Yes.
So the only evidence that the district court had was your expert opinion. One expert and one eyewitness, if you want to call them that, affidavit. Was that it?
That is correct.
No reference to the Pearl...
The Pearl Core report, and that's a good phrase for it, because it's a general report about this line of tires. That was not before the court. The NHTSA report was not before the court. The public citizen report that's been submitted was not before the trial court. And my point was, and even further, some of the material that was before the trial court, Firestone submits, should not have been considered because it was case-specific testimony in the form of an affidavit from Mr. Pearl that was submitted after him not submitting a case-specific report as required by Rule 26A. If you strip away everything that either wasn't there or shouldn't have been there, there's no proof at all, even circumstantially, as to what caused this tire to fail. I mean, you have Ms. Jett's affidavit says there was a tire failure. But if you strip away everything that either wasn't there or shouldn't have been there, there's no circumstantial proof of a product defect at all. But I'd like to comment just briefly on the recall-related material because it does fix your... It's a primary part of the appellant's brief here. At best, the fact that there was a recall in NHTSA investigation establishes that there may be a defect in these tires related to design defect that may cause a higher chance of failure. There's no evidence that that risk came to pass here. But second, and perhaps more importantly, this case simply doesn't fit the profile of what NHTSA investigated. And I'm quoting now, NHTSA said, the tread separations at issue in this investigation occur only after several years of exposure. What, in simple terms, NHTSA talked about and Mr. Pearl talks about in his core report is an alleged defect that has to do with the amount of rubber between the two layers of the tire, the two belts in the tire. And the allegation is that over an extended period of time, but before the tire wears out, there'll be cracking and fatiguing in there because there's not enough rubber to hold it together and it comes apart. Now, that's the allegation. Firestone disagrees with that, but that's what the recall was about. This tire was only in service for 6 months or less, according to Ms. Jett's testimony. There is absolutely no evidence, even in the extra evidence that's been added, that these tires will fail in 6 months or less from this alleged defect. Even if you accept that NHTSA report is correct and that Mr. Pearl's report is correct, there is no evidence in there whatsoever to suggest that failure can occur in 6 months. So I submit that all of that stuff, even if it is considered, doesn't really help the plaintiff out here. I think it's also noteworthy with all the stuff that's been added to the record, what isn't in the record? Well, we don't have, the plaintiff didn't submit the official police report from this accident. There's no witness statements or affidavits or deposition testimony from any independent third party, such as the investigating officer, the tow truck driver, people who were on the scene, the insurance company. There's myriad people who saw this tire, and we don't have any testimony from any of those people. And I submit that the likely reason for that is they don't have anything to say about the tire. And not because they didn't see it, but because they didn't see a tire failure. This is really a case that's purely circumstantial, and I think the trial court was exactly right when the trial court said that it really comes down to Ms. Jett's affidavits. Because Mr. Pearl, in his case-specific affidavits, even if they're considered, specifically say that the conclusions therein are dependent upon Ms. Jett's affidavits. And Ms. Jett, simply try as she might, was not in a position to know some of the things that she asserts. The court wasn't weighing her credibility. A court on summary judgment is always entitled to consider whether the affidavit or testimony is based on personal knowledge. And that's what the court was doing, not weighing her credibility. The court was recognizing the fact that Ms. Jett didn't account for other drivers of the vehicle. Ms. Jett says she didn't hit any large objects or potholes, but there's no way Ms. Jett can account for what commonly happens with tires, which is they are subject to some damage from a smaller object, such as a nail or whatnot, gets embedded in the tire. So try as she might, There were things that Ms. Jett cannot account for simply beyond her personal knowledge. And the court correctly noted that when you look at her affidavits and everything else stacked up based on those affidavits, that there was still too much room for speculation and conjecture about such things as the Decatur plant issue that I've mentioned. And the plaintiff may very well have raised the possibility that this tire failed as a result of a design defect, but she hasn't sufficiently negated the very real possibility, particularly when it was only in service for 6 months, that it didn't fail as a result of the design defect. And so,
counsel, let me ask,
yes,
go back to the evidence. Pearl, the district judge quotes extensively from Mr. Pearl's affidavit.
Yes.
I thought you told me that wasn't before the court.
Oh, no. We have two different kinds of materials from Mr. Pearl in this case. We have his affidavits, which are case-specific to this tire. Then we have his core report.
That's the core report. Fine,
okay. All right. And so there's just too much room for speculation and conjecture here, and that's why Firestone submits the trial court was correct in granting summary judgment. Firestone would ask this court to affirm that grant of summary judgment. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Phillips. Ms. Francis, how much time does she have? 2 minutes?
When considering a motion for summary judgment, a court is obligated to accept all facts in favor of the non-moving party. That is Ms. Jett. The court did not do that. And I submit that all of the reports that Mr. Phillips is referring to, that they are applicable in the multi-district litigation. They were part of that litigation and were properly before the court. Because we believe that the trial judge weighed the credibility and simply decided that her affidavit was not true and then entered into speculation that something else could have happened that she did not address in her affidavit. I'm confused as to why the trial judge would not have assumed in her favor that she was, in fact, the only person that had driven the vehicle and therefore could know what she said in her affidavit. I'm confused by that, and I feel that it was reversible error, and we would ask you to reverse the judgment of the trial court. Thank you.
Okay, thank you to both counsel. Last case for